Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Friday, November 2nd, just days away from the much-anticipated, much-looked-forward-to midterm election. And conventional wisdom has it that what? The Democrats will sweep the House. We will have the end of January, we will have Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Maxine Waters, the race-baiting nincompoop from Compton, will be our, what will she be? She'll have some sort of gavel. They say that because the committee chairman, when you're in Congress, the committee chairperson gets a gavel to put into order the meeting, right? So if somebody gets a gavel, they're important, at least in Congress. I think giving Maxine Waters anything that gives her any power is a frightening idea, frightening thought. But nonetheless, we'll have her, Adam Schiff, right? The guy who never blinks. Freak of nature. He'll have another committee somewhere too. Intelligence. I think the House Intelligence Committee. And what will they all do? They will all investigate Donaldus Maximus. Now, I got a question for you. Did you see the news this morning? In October, which is, if you've lost track, it's last month, 250,000 new jobs in just 1 month. And we now have a record unemployment of over 156 million people. It is a record employment number. Trump approval rating. This is another bit of news that I think on all these are, by the way, if you're not tracking this, all of these are factors that will go into my opinion that I will give you here in a second. Trump approval rating is at 51%. And Rasmussen, I think, does a fairly good job of tracking this there. Of all the pollsters out there, Rasmussen seems to be the more reasonable one. So now we got strong wage gains. Everything's looking good. All indicators in the economy are a go, combined with rising numbers, popularity numbers for the president. So what do we make of this? The question to ask is, do you vote the party out of power that is producing a fantastic economy? See, people vote, generally speaking, in their self-interest, right? We all do this. We have a certain idea. Many people out there are ideologues, and they have an idea. And those ideologues tend to vote against their self-interest, incidentally, funny enough. But most people, especially when we talk about those independent voters, right, those unicorns in the wild who are among us somewhere and may or may not vote, but when they do, they surprise us, right? This is all conventional thinking. These are people, I have to tell you, these are people that vote in their self-interest. They're less concerned about party affiliation. They're less concerned about big radical ideas one way or the other. They care about bread on the table. And by the way, this is not an unreasonable position to take. So if this is an election decided by independent voters and the economy's going gangbusters, everybody's successful, and not just rich people, right? I grew up in the 80s. We were always told how Ronald Reagan's economy only benefited the rich. Remember that? This is not an economy that is just benefiting the wealthy. There are huge wage gains for lower income folks, for middle America. And I think, look, this is an X factor that cannot possibly help the Democrats pick up seats. I don't get it. So, yes, on one side, you know, you've got these polls out there and they say, but Sam, you cannot disregard. This is 11 points. This is 12 points. This is 15 points. Well, they're actually not. The ones that matter are not even that far apart. 8 points, 7 points, right, are some of the, you know, races that are definitely called leaning Democrat where it would be an upset victory. I remember when Hillary was leaning 11 points, 12 points, was ahead of Trump in October, in November. I remember that. You do too. So I have a problem with this polling because I take polling as one thing and one thing only. It is a data point for me over that I put over here on this one side. But on the other side, I allow myself to be influenced by things that I see on the ground. I allow myself to be influenced by other data that I think is as important. For example, the numbers on the economy. I'm also telling you that we've got a president right now. Love him or hate him, he's doing everything right when it comes to campaigning for the midterms. I have not seen in my lifetime a president that is doing more midway through his first term to help his party maintain power. Nothing. Usually what happens is the president will make a few appearances, send out a few robocalls, write a few letters, host some fundraisers, perhaps for congressional, whatchamacallits, whoever they are, you know, whatever party he belongs to. He'll help in that way, but in a very limited capacity. Trump is doing exactly the opposite. He's rewriting the book. Forget different. He's rewriting the book. How many rallies is he doing in a day? 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 rallies? It's insanity. He's crisscrossing the country. And the best thing is that the Republican Party, at least in the last few months, has fully embraced him. I mean Republican, I mean in the legislative branch, right, in Congress. Paul Ryan is on his way out, gone, right? He's out. And so now his district is going to be filled with either a Republican or a Democrat. But either way, not Paul Ryan. We had we lost, of course, Mr. McCain along the way. So we've got that acidic voice out somewhere gone. And Trump was it Kavanaugh? Was that the issue that galvanized everybody? I don't necessarily think so. Although it was a big factor. I think that Republicans are realizing that you cannot win by placating the media and playing by their rules over and over and over again. This is a critical truth that is proven. The minute you're a Republican and you try to play by the Democratic Party media rules, you're already instantly put on the defensive. Because the entire conversation about who you are is actually a conversation about who you aren't. Because if you are a Republican running in a race that is attracting national media attention, you immediately have to start explaining to everybody how you're not racist, how you're not bigoted, how you love gays, how you love people of different faiths, how you are open to different lifestyles. To total absurdity. It's 2018. You know, I know there are bigots out there. I get it, but let's get real. But the Democratic Party and their, you know, willing cohorts in the media make this a regular, steady issue about racism, oppression, bigotry, hate. Because they have no real issues to run on. They can't run on the economy. They screwed the pooch on the economy. They had the controls to the economy for years. And what did they do with it? All they did, well, look, it's turn the economy over to a Marxist. And I think the 20th century has many instructive examples of how that will play out. So here we are. They really don't have a lot to run on. And this is why you're hearing racism. This is why you're hearing bigotry. This is why you're hearing hate. And the entire entire immigration issue that Trump is pushing and that the media in a shrill unison of opposition is calling stupid politically, right? It's actually the exact opposite. Listen to me. It is the exact opposite because while a few elites on the left coast, on the east coast, in big metropolitan areas, liberals like the idea of an open border. average Americans, middle-of-the-road Americans, conservative Americans believe in the rule of law. For them, immigration is such a great example of broken government. Whether they are Democrat or Republican, they have both been, we all have been betrayed by our politicians on this issue. The Democratic Party is disingenuous about their support. The Republicans are total, well, history of being total liars on this issue, right? Tough immigration, close the border. And the minute the election is over, what happens? Well, yeah, the exactly. We listen to big business. We listen to people who want cheap wages. We listen to that part of the Republican Party, and that's a very powerful lobby. And of course, next thing you know, we've done nothing on purpose. And Trump has come along and captured this issue as a point of serious discontent. And we're not discontent about this issue because we're racist. We're not discontent about this issue because we're bigoted. We're okay with an open border as long as we know who's coming in, as long as we get to pick and choose the best that our Congress decides that we want, right? We want some criteria for entry. This caravan, if you think that this caravan is bad optics for Trump, you need a new course in understanding America. Because I'm telling you, the only way, and I said this last week, I'm going to say it again, the only way that this caravan that's heading for the border now, maybe some 800, 500 miles away, of people that want to get in and intend on storming the border here the way that they did the border into Mexico from Guatemala, those people, okay, we don't like that. And we don't like it because we're racist, but we don't like that because it is a violation of law. And for every person that tells you these are good people, oh yeah, they're good people. Well, if they're good people, they follow our rules and apply and wait in line for their turn to enter the country. But they're not good people. They intend to storm the border. And if Trump gives in to them and lets them in, he's toast and the Republicans are done. But if Trump does, in fact, mobilize the military as he's promised, you saw the big brouhaha about him saying, if they throw stones, we're going to shoot. And the world went wild. Oh my gosh. You would think that basically he had just said he was setting up concentration camps on CNN, the way their short response, right? That I am. Oh, so somebody shows up at your I'm curious here. Let's say you live in a house and that house has a little picket fence around it or whatever. And somebody shows up at your on your doorstep there. On the sidewalk and demands to be let into your house and starts throwing rocks. Okay, the shooting thing, right? But are you alarmed? That's my question to you. Are you alarmed? Let's say you're a woman. We're talking about women right now a lot in this election cycle. You're a woman and you're home alone. And you got a bunch of guys showing up that they're throwing rocks at your house. What do you do? Well, first of all, you're calling the cops. You're not okay with it. I don't care if you're a liberal. I don't care if you're a conservative. I don't care if you're a Republican, Democrat, independent, libertarian. Doesn't matter. You're not okay with that. And anyone who says that they are lying. And on that fundamental level, you must understand that this issue is not a winner for the Democratic Party. And to the extent, and this is where I think Trump needs to do a better job, he's got to connect Congress, right? He's got to connect Congress to immigration. Now, he keeps saying it. He repeats it. You know, hey, we got terrible laws. They need to get fixed. But when it comes, for example, to this 14th Amendment issue, right, this birthright citizenship that is automatically granted. If you drop a baby on U.S. soil, as long as you're not a diplomat from a foreign country, you drop a baby, that baby's an American. Okay. And that issue, you know, Trump's putting out this executive order. I'm going to talk about this in great detail and explain to you what's going on with this. But I want to tell you, he needs to tie this to Congress because it's Congress that can fix this. Believe it or not, they're the ones that are given the authority in the Constitution to fix immigration and even to have say over naturalization laws. So, with all of this said, tie it to Congress. Make it a congressional issue. Nobody, next week, nobody's going to be rushing to the polls in any great, substantial, overwhelming numbers voting for Democrats. They think Democrats are just going to do what they've been saying all along, which is let everybody in, sing kumbaya, and let lawless people storm the border. It's a great issue. Keep it up. All right, lots to go over. Yes, I'm going to get into this birthright issue, of course, explain some of the history of it. And I'll tell you what I think is if what you, the big question is, right, is it constitutional or not? Is Trump going to be able to do this? And I also want to get into, well, I have some anecdotes about this that I think are interesting. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Okay, you want to know what I would do if I were home alone and some guys were storming my property line? If they got into my house, I would shoot. There it is. And I'm well within my rights to do so. If I think they're going to harm me, if I think that they're going to hurt me, I think if they're throwing rocks, which are deadly weapons, you know, yeah, I'm going to shoot. And I want to know, this is my question when it comes to immigration, why the great liberal hypocrisy is, why do we treat our country differently than you treat your house? No liberal can explain this to me. I talk about my neighborhood. I did this, I think last week was mentioned. I live in a gated community. There a lot of people do in Southern California. It's not an entirely uncommon thing. But most people I know at least have a house that has a door or an apartment that has a door, and the door has a lock. If you really do not have a lock on your door, then you're idiotic. But beyond that, too, I'm fine. I'll put you over in a different category. But to all of these liberals that live behind gates, that live behind locked doors, that have video cameras, that have alarm systems, do all these things to protect their property, to protect themselves and their families, I have a question. Why do you do all that for your house, but you're not willing to do that down on the border? What's the difference? Because I submit to you, the difference is not, it's not necessarily a big one. Now, illegal immigration, put it over here for a minute. There is an absolutely legal, but not right, thing that is happening with birthright citizenship automatically granted to anybody born on our soil. And I see it firsthand here in Southern California. And if you live, I'm going to tell you right now, if you live in Orange County, you know exactly what I'm talking about. There are houses set up, and some of them quite expensive. And every morning, I see it in my, there's not one in my neighborhood. There's one in my old neighborhood where I used to live. A house where you had, I'm an observant person. And I can tell you that every day, all I saw was a bunch of very pregnant Asian women waddling about. And it wasn't, I'm not saying, I'm saying like 12, 10, 12, 15. And houses like this are all across Southern California. Now, what is this all about? Well, there's an entire industry in China, mostly, where these groups basically buy a house or rent a house, and they put a ton of beds in it, some of them bunk beds, whatever. And the women come right before they're ready to drop a kid, or maybe a month before. You know, there's a point in time where you can't travel. So they come here and they get set up with healthcare. They, by the way, they pay for all of this, right? This is it's actually not. I'll say this: it's not a drain necessarily on our system. Hoag Hospital in Newport charges, and I know this through somebody that is inside and has informed me of this. They charge an insane amount of money to these foreign people coming in and to give birth, and they pay it in cash. And it is an enormous source of business for Hoag, all right? And other hospitals, I'm sure, do the same thing. So these people come over just to have the kid. Bam! Then they leave. They go back to China. And their child forever and ever has U.S. citizenship. Do you think that's right? See, I don't think that our... I don't think that when back in 1868, when they ratified the 14th Amendment, I don't think that they had this in mind. But I'm also not one. I'm a strict reader of the Constitution. I believe that words matter. So I have some thoughts on how this is going to play out legally. And I think in lieu of doing a legal segment here, I'm just going to take a little bit of time here in the program to explain it. It's not too wonky. I promise you it's going to be digestible. But you got to understand this. So because when you hear people saying Trump can't do this, the only way that you can ever make any changes to this is by changing the Constitution. Not exactly true. And there's a large number of scholars right now who agree with me on this. So we'll see how it plays out, but I'll explain some of the issues at stake. If I were China, let me tell you this right now. If I were China and I wanted to find a way, and they, by the way, China knows how to play long game, I would be encouraging my citizens to go over there, have babies, right? Get U.S. citizenship. And those people can vote. They can vote from abroad. And the long tentacles of the Chinese Communist Party, I don't want to be alarming here. But I would not be surprised if this is a national strategy that's employed by the Chinese for long-term control of the United States. It's not a good thing. It's really not a good thing. We've got to fix it. Sam Rzhovsky back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Rzhovsky. You'll find him very entertaining. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Nation, rarely wrong, but always right here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Friday, November 2nd, the last show before Election Day. And one of the big issues this week was Trump's very bold proclamation that he would be signing an executive order ending birthright citizenship to babies born on U.S. soil automatically. Now you gotta let me. So there's a few things going on here. When you've got an amendment to the Constitution, the 14th Amendment, it was ratified in 1868. This is after the abolition of slavery, and the reason it came into being is you had a large number of slaves, former slaves in this country. And you had to clear up their legal status. The easiest and also, frankly, the most proper thing to do was to do exactly what happened in the 14th Amendment and confer upon them citizenship by way of birth. Okay. Now, I read the most ridiculous thing yesterday about this. The Wall Street Journal had something in there that said, what is Trump doing? He can't do this. There's no way. And do you know why? And I was like, oh, I'm reading it, right? So I'm, tell me why. And it said, because it is directly contradicted by the Constitution annotated from the Library of Congress. And I just about fell out of my chair because I was telling you, as a lawyer, what the Library of Congress writes about the Constitution, I don't give a rat's rear end. It doesn't matter. It's not worth the paper it's written on. This is like you getting tested on a book and you get the answer wrong and you tell the teacher, well, no, you know what? The Cliff's Notes to the book said X. The teacher's going to kick you in the A-money-money and send you packing. So anyway, intrepid journalism there from the Wall Street Journal. So the real question is, in the 14th Amendment, you've got there's a plain reading of the 14th Amendment, and then you've got some case law, right, that backs it up. Now, this is where it gets a little bit interesting, because there were... So the first understanding of it when it came out was everyone, if they're born here, automatically gets citizenship. Well, then there came a case, Elk versus Wilkins. And Elk is a guy who was an Indian. He was a Native American. And he was a member of a tribe. And he goes to vote in a local election. And Wilkins, the defendant in this case, was a registrar of voters. And he said, kind of like they do right now, other places that are controlled by Republicans... This is early voter suppression. He said, no, you may not be registered to vote in this state because you're an Indian. And this was 1884. So this is, you know, what is it, 20 years after ratification of the 14th Amendment. And do you know what the court said? Court said, you're right, because he's part of a sovereign nation. Now, this later was done and fixed. This case was fixed. Interestingly enough, by an act of Congress in 1924 that clearly stated that all Indians automatically are given citizenship if they're born in the U.S. It doesn't matter if they're a member of a tribe, if they were born on a reservation, et cetera, et cetera. But it was fixed, interestingly enough, by an act of Congress. Now, I bring this up because the way that this will get analyzed is they're going to look at past cases and they're going to look at who has power to make these decisions. And Article 1 of the Constitution deals with Congress and the powers that Congress has, what Congress can do, what areas of law and what they, you know, what their responsibilities are and what they're allowed to do in effect. And the top thing there is naturalization, immigration law and policy, right? That is the responsibility of the legislative branch of Congress. And they did that historically and have done that historically by affecting the meaning and the terms and the conditions of how citizens are naturalized. Being born here is the same. Citizenship by birth is a form of naturalization, right? You get it. You get citizenship by way of some act or some condition occurring. So when we come back, can Trump do this executive order? Because that's going to be the question of the day. I think my answer might surprise you. And I'll explain it all when we come back. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, continuing with this topic when we return.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
The 14th Amendment says all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. Now, this is going to be we're all going to memorize this here because in the next few weeks, this is all anybody is going to be talking about because Trump has promised to clarify that the sentence here, or the words here that are subject to the jurisdiction thereof does not apply to children of illegal immigrants. Now, I love when people read the Constitution and just focus on one little part of it, right? Here's the 14th Amendment. We're just going to focus on that and ignore the rest of the Constitution. You can't do that because the rest of the Constitution is going to give you perspective on who decides what. And as I was saying earlier, Article 1 of the Constitution gives power over this issue, over naturalization and immigration, to whom? To Congress. So my short answer to the question, what, is this executive order going to fly? Probably not. And it's probably not going to fly because I believe in separation of powers, and generally speaking, so do the Supreme Court justices right now, as a general consensus there. And I don't see them allowing the president to, in this way, encroach on the power vested in Congress, right? It's the executive branch, the White House, versus Congress, the legislative branch. That's what this issue is going to come down to. Nobody's really saying this, right? Because everybody's saying, you can't do this. It's in the Constitution. You can't change anything in the Constitution. And nobody can affect it. It's not true because the Constitution specifically grants authority to Congress to make changes to our immigration and our naturalization laws. Now, what is Trump doing politically? Because this is the part of it that's so fascinating. I think he's doing exactly the right thing politically. Think of this issue as a giant, I don't know, boil, like a pimple, right? This has been a problem. We got Chinese coming over by the tens of thousands, dropping babies on us left and right. You got all these people out there with U.S. citizenship with no ties to this country. They're not invested, right? These are people with full rights to vote, collect welfare, do whatever they wish, study, take advantage of grants, whatnot, but have no ties, have spent no time in the U.S., et cetera, et cetera. Not a good policy to give away citizenship in this fashion. So it's been, but everybody's been too afraid to touch it. Along comes the great orange wonder, Donald Trump. And what does he do? He does what he does best. If you don't understand this by now, you missed the last 2.5 years, 3 years. He takes an issue that nobody wants to touch, but that's a festering, pimply wound of mess somewhere, and he just stabs it. This is political pimple popping. And you know what? How is this going to play out? I think pretty simply, it's going to get challenged in the court. The court's going to tell us what we can and can't do. And then what will happen is we'll do it. But in the process, we're starting a conversation, a national conversation about birthright citizenship. And ultimately, whether it's a constitutional issue, right? Whether it's a legal issue or a policy issue or whatnot, it depends on our common consent. So even if you go and decide to, through a ratification process, to make an amendment to the Constitution, it's doable. Everybody says it's not doable, but it's doable if there is a consensus out there among us as citizens that we have a problem. And I got to tell you, the only way I know and how to start a dialogue about something you got to fire the first shot. Trump is a guy who's really good at firing the first shot. Now, what do you guys want from everybody in the media who's screaming, he's a liar? He lies. He has this thin relationship with the truth. And case in point, he's up there bold-faced lying that he has the power to do this and this executive order is 100% legal and da-da-da-da-da. Again, let me explain to you what he's doing. I believe full well that Trump knows that this isn't going to fly legally. But he's stabbing at the heart of this issue the only way he knows how. And he, in order to get the matter into the courts, you have to have a controversy. You have to have a wrong being created or some kind of issue, right? Courts don't, the Supreme Court cannot just hear a matter because they want to hear it. They can't decide an issue just because they want to decide an issue. A lawsuit has to be brought. So what's going to happen here? A lawsuit's going to be brought. Now, Trump can't get up there and say, yeah, I know I'm full of crap. Yeah, I know I don't have the law, but I'm going to do it anyway. I mean, maybe you want him to say that. I don't, it's not, that's not a good move. So what he says is, I'm doing this. The law's on my side. And if you don't like it, challenge me. And in the process, he's putting pressure to, remember this, he's putting pressure on Congress, who has the power, who has the authority, who is constitutionally responsible to make a change here. And I think we're starting a conversation that's not going to end anytime soon. So that's what he's doing. Who decides this? Congress. Trump, I think, knows full well that he's just getting the conversation rolling, and it'll be interesting to watch how it plays out. All right, don't go anywhere. Sam Rejofsky back right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rejofsky. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Well, I just inked on myself with the pen. Too busy writing here. Sam Rejofsky back behind the Sam Nation microphone in the saddle, rounding out a action-packed week here preceding the midterm elections on Tuesday. The woman that should have been president, Hillary Rodham Clinton, was on a Recode Decode podcast in New York with a gal named Kara Swisher. I think you know her. She's a journalist of some repute, left-winger, and it was a live recording, which may have done poor Hillary in. You know how Eric Holder came out and said that, you know, when the Republicans go low, you know, Michelle Obama says, when Republicans go low, we should go high. And he goes, that's not how we should do it. When they go low, we ought to kick them in the shins. Well, and Cory Booker said some, you know, Spartacus. Remember Cory Booker, Spartacus? Anyway, so Hillary, I guess Kara Swisher gets the two of them confused. And listen to this exchange and the absolutely appalling thing that Hillary Clinton says. Listen closely.
What do you think of Cory Booker's? And you didn't comment on him, and you feel free.
Oh, I adore him.
What do you think about him saying kick them in the shins, essentially? Start to get to that kind of political.
Well, that was Eric Holder.
Yeah, Eric Holder.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know they all look alike.
No, they don't. Oh, well done.
I know they all look alike, talking about two African-American men. Wow. Can you imagine if Trump said this? Now, everything you need to know about this nonsense played out in a dialogue between Juan Williams and Martha McCallum. This is on Tuesday, the very next day. This happened on Friday. Hillary said this Friday afternoon. And then this was on following Tuesday, Juan Williams on Fox News with Martha McCallum. And because we're all asking, like, how does Hillary get away with this? I mean, if Trump was talking to a reporter and he said this comment, I don't think that Kara Swisher would say to him, oh, well done. Well, oh, I see. Oh, you're so funny. No chance. So here's the exchange. And listen to how contorted Juan Williams, who is Fox News domesticated liberal, has to make race and standards for racism to fit helping Hillary and hurting Trump. Listen closely.
Hillary Clinton was just playing on the old meme of black people looking alike or something. And it was a joke. But it was, to me, obviously a transparent joke. I don't think there was any ill will intended or involved.
You know, if President Trump said that in the different same situation.
Different context because of his whole divisive nature in terms of racial comments. And I think President Trump in that situation, he would have set off alarms, but I think he would have had the same defense.
But this is what, I mean, we live in such a hypersensitive moment, right? And when you and I spoke about Ron DeSantis, mm-hmm. you know, and he said, monkey it up, right? You felt that was clearly
Now, the question was
a racial issue, and I said, I think he was just joking.
Yes.
But he wasn't allowed to, that he wasn't let off the hook for that.
No, because I think that the whole question was about DeSantis playing to white nationalist instincts.
No, that's it. DeSantis, who is the Republican gubernatorial candidate, when he said monkey it up and his opponent is Gillum and he's a black man, that was DeSantis sending a coded message to white nationalists. You know, I think it's very difficult to follow these rules, right? And when I say follow, I mean to track and understand these rules and how they apply and how they don't apply, who they apply to. But as best as I can tell, back to the open of our program, Republicans are evil white supremacists, right? Their motivations for anything and everything is automatically suspect. And in Juan Williams' world and the world of other Democrats, it is up to Republicans to explain why they're not racist. But the presumption of fairness is immediately accorded to their side. I don't think anybody in America really follows this at all. I think they're losing us, right? They are losing any moral high ground that they may have had years ago. It's becoming ridiculous. So more on this and how it fits into our national conversation right now. Up after the break. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, another hour of Sam Nation fun up next.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Hi, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, politically incorrect and proud of it here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Happy Friday. I hope we all have some fun weekend plans ahead. I know I do. I'm taking Vera and Ava, my girls, to an Indian princess's camp out. And, one of the things that you have to do if you know what this Indian princess's thing, it's like scouts, but it's for dads. What's that? Yeah, it's exactly. If you are a Harvard law professor and a senator from Massachusetts, this is your scouting program. No, but really, this is scouting for. It's like a father-daughter bonding event. It's fun because we go with a bunch of dads and they bring their girls, and it's really a great time had by all. So we're doing a little camp out tomorrow. But one of the things you have to do when you join the Indian Princesses. You have to pick an Indian name. And so I opted that my best Indian name would be a little white cloud that cried. And it was not without controversy. But I've been able to maintain it. And it's even on, I had to sign a waiver. It's on my waiver. I'm surprised anybody ever invites me to anything. Terrible friend to have. So anyway, that's why I'm doing this weekend. I'm looking forward to it. Speaking of radical behavior, there is a new theory out there about radicalization. Now, GQ magazine, that's Gentleman's Quarterly, used to stick to things like best shaving cream and where to go to get a custom fitted shirt. But now they've veered into politics. And yes, of course, everything true elitists, almost always totally left wing. So they've got a correspondent, Julia Ioffe. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, Eoffe, says this, or said this on Monday, talking to Jake Tapper on The Lead.
I think, you know, this president, one of the things that he really launched his presidential run on is talking about Islamic radicalization. And this president has radicalized so many more people than ISIS ever did. I mean, the way he talks, the way that he allows these people, the way he winks and nods to these groups, the way he says, I know I'm not supposed to say it, but I'm a nationalist. The way that he hems and haws when he has to condemn these people and kind of gritting his teeth, kind of says, fine, okay, I condemn this.
The way he winks and nods to these groups, the way he says, I know I'm not supposed to say it, but I'm a nationalist. This is so absurd. I'll tell you, the one thing is about this, is in it, however wrong it may be, there's an element of truth. But it's been missed. It's missed by every liberal talking about the subject, because to them, it's they've made up their minds. For them, it's a religion. They know that Republicans are racist. They know that Trump is a racist. They know he's a bigot. They know that, you know, we're all white nationalists. But there's a bigger issue at play here. Trump is sending out a message, but it's not a coded message. It's a very real direct communication that it's okay to be proud of your country. Now, for any person who has been indoctrinated through higher education, has gone to a liberal college, so basically any university with the exception of, I don't know, like five, and has gone through and had professors who are burnt out hippies, American hating left wing nut jobs. So what do you learn when you take a history class in college? You learn about how awful this country is. And then guess what? Then we elect Obama as our president, and he tells us again how many bad things we've done as a country. And he goes to Cairo, and he goes to Berlin. He goes all around the world telling everybody, I'm so sorry for all the bad things we did. I'm so sorry. And you know what I'm thinking? I'll speak for myself. You know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking, you know what? I know we're not perfect. I know that we have our problems. I know that there are some crappy people here on both sides of the aisle. I know that we, you know, are still evolving. But we are a damn fine country. We are a great place. And we've been on the side of right over and over and over again in history. We have spilt more blood in Europe and elsewhere, defending the rights of others, protecting other people, you know, than any other superpower ever in the history of the world. And I think what Trump is doing here, the coded message is right. So the left wants to make this into a racial argument, a racist argument, white nationalism. They put white nationalism in there. But we're not a white country. Americans, we're of all different races and backgrounds, and we have different cultures, you know, come from certainly we're diverse, right? But some of the most patriotic, America-loving people I know are first-generation immigrants. All immigrants. I'm telling you, right now, my parents love this country more than any place in the world. They're not white nationalists. I know people come here from, I'm telling you, a lot of different places that are, they're not white, but they love America. And the thing that they love about Trump, they get it. They want to be patriotic. People want to love their country. And the left, by continuing to talk down to these people, because can you imagine? You come here from India, open up a business, work really hard. You love this country. You know that where you came from, you don't want to go back there. You visit, you know, once a year, twice a year, once every 5 years, whatever it is. And it's just enough to remind you everything that you love about living in, I don't know, Nevada or Wisconsin or California. You love being here. And you got a president that goes up on stage and hugs the American flag. who respects the country and the sovereignty of the country. By the way, you had to wait in a line to get into the country, right? Or your parents did. You followed all the rules. And you got to have a president up there who says, hey, other people that come here, I want them to follow the rules too. And by the way, I love this country. This country is a great place. And I'm a nationalist. I put America first. I'm telling you, as the son of immigrants, this is not a white nationalist slogan. I know it's not. And guess who else knows it's not? Millions and millions and millions of Americans, among them immigrants. And when the left continues to make this issue about race, I think they're losing people left and right. When they're turning this into a question of racism, it becomes nonsensical because it doesn't comport with reality. And by the way, I only think this works really for people who really believed everything that they heard from their poli-sci professor at UCLA, right? I think that's the group of people, and that's what these people are. They went to top schools, had supposedly top-level education, but were really indoctrinated into loathing their country. Don Lemon, earlier this week on Monday, was talking with Chris Cuomo and sort of off the top of his head came up with this absolute beauty. Listen.
I keep trying to point out to people not to demonize any one group or any one ethnicity, but we keep thinking that the biggest terror threat is something else. So we have to stop demonizing people and realize the biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized right, to the right. And we have to start doing something about them. There is no travel ban on them. There is no ban on, you know, they had the Muslim ban. There is no white guy ban. So what do we do about that?
There's no white guy ban? Biggest threat to this country is white men, most of them radicalized to the right. This is insanity. Especially when you consider that the entire statement starts with him saying that I keep trying to point out to people not to demonize any one group or any one ethnicity. Oh, by the way, we're not going to demonize any one group. But by the way, white men are radical terrorists. this is sick. I don't know who this plays to. But it's certainly not independence, right? The media is there. And who, ask yourselves, who has baited them into committing this type of self-destruction on air live in front of millions of people? Well, none other than Donald Trump. And I think when we look back historically, we go, look, look, this was a president who masterfully played his opponents and got them to self-destruct. Very, very interesting stuff. Now, I thought, just as a political observer, I thought that the response, there was quite a bit of outcry over this, and Don Lemon was forced to go on air and talk about it. So we come back. I want to play this because it ties in, actually, of all things, to the Megyn Kelly debacle. So I have just some media observations about this when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Rogowski. You'll find him very interesting. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
What was Megyn Kelly's biggest mistake? Was it the blackface comment or what happened after that? I'm putting that there for a second, just leaving it on the table. Here is Don Lemon, after saying that white people, white men, are the most radicalized, dangerous group of people in the country, said this on Wednesday in response to criticism that he received.
Tonight, I also want to talk about some uncomfortable truth.
the truth about who really carries out domestic terror attacks in this country. Earlier this week, I made some comments about that in a conversation with Chris. I said that the biggest terror threat in this country comes from radicals on the far right, primarily white men. That angered some people. But let's put emotion aside and look at the cold, hard facts. The evidence is overwhelming. A recent report from the Government Accountability Office shows that even though more people died in attacks connected to Islamic extremists, the vast majority of deadly attacks in this country from 2001 to 2016 were carried out by far-right violent extremists.
Okay, my name's Don Lemon. I said something outrageous on television, and now I'm going to go and contort some statistics together to explain to you and show you how what I said was absolutely factual. But you hear what he's saying. He's basically saying that, and I haven't vetted these statistics, but taking him at his word, that the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, between 2001 and 2016, very arbitrary time period, but whatever, Islamic terrorists killed way more people, but in terms of individual attacks, you know, it's right-wing male white extremists. It just means that Islamic terrorists are a lot more efficient, I guess. So they get some kind of prize from Don Lemon in that department. This is absurd. But what is this really all about? This is what Megyn Kelly should have done. Notice that this is red, right? The first comment, Don Lemon is just talking. Here he's reading from a teleprompter. He has these prepared remarks. When Megyn Kelly got up and said that she doesn't understand blackface, it's not a big deal, whatever. And it was such a trifle, stupid comment, right? And so she gets up and she apologizes. I'm telling you, apologizing is almost always never a good idea. Don't do it. They always want Trump to apologize and he just doubles down. Don Lemon did exactly what he needed to do, maintain his credibility. Double down. If Megyn had gone up and said, you know what, I really don't get what the big deal is. What's the big deal? It's 2018. I'm not a racist person. I can speak for me. If I go to a party, if I go to a Halloween deal, and I dress up as a black person that I admire, and I put, you know, some makeup on. I have no racist instinct in my body. I have no animus. I have no dislike or hate. It's a costume. It's a costume, for Pete's sake. We got to get over. I mean, she is a host of a program on a major network. She has the ability to change minds on this issue. And instead, oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, I didn't know. I had no idea. Da, da, da. And then she looks pathetic. She looks weak. She looks dumb. When there's a perfectly sane explanation for why she said what she said. Well, anyway. Tale of two broadcasters. And certainly Don Lemon's a moron, but he knows what to do when it comes to protecting his career. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Friday Funny, here we go. A great news story yesterday, November 1st, from the Associated Press. American flight number 363 had a little bit of extra cargo in the hold. When it was being loaded at Kansas City International Airport, One of the baggage handlers actually working for another airline, Piedmont Airlines, which I believe is the feeder airline for American, was on the ramp. He's loading up the airplane, right? This is the you know, a-hole that throws your luggage and scuffs your, tears your new luggage. Those guys. Anyway, he's loading up the thing. He's drunk as a skunk, which apparently you're not allowed to do when you're on the job pretty much anywhere. So he's drunk, and when he's done loading the bags, he accidentally loads himself into the airplane, and the airplane takes off with him in the hold. Now I have a question for you. What do you think happened to him? Well, good news. The good news is most airplanes have pressurized and heated holds. You kind of need both in order to survive. Do you know how cold it gets up at altitude, let's say 35,000 feet? Generally speaking, it's about minus 50 Celsius. Think about that. That's cold. And so you're not going to survive. If it's pressurized and you can breathe, that's one thing, but you're not going to survive that kind of cold. Unless, depends on how drunk he was, right? Negative 58 Fahrenheit. I thought it was more. Oh, negative, there we go. Thank you, Robbie. All right. That's where they get close, right? The scales get close at negative 50. So it's negative 58 degrees Fahrenheit, negative 50 Celsius. I guess if you've got a lot of alcohol in your system, you're not going to freeze. But nonetheless, he survived the flight and he shows up in Chicago. And that's where he wakes up. Can you imagine just Oh, my gosh. Yeah. No word on whether he's lost employment. Yeah, I think I can figure that one out pretty quick. Oh, exactly. Listen, you pull into the gate. They start, I'm in row 33, whatever. I'm looking, I'm in window, I'm squeezed in. I can't get up yet because everybody stood up. So I start looking out the window of them unloading the, bringing the little ramp up. You see bag, baggage handler, bag. Oh, my goodness. This guy's going to quickly be unemployed. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rzhovsky, all right, I need to get to Kanye, too, who has... claims he's been used and is leaving politics. Now, it's being characterized as a schism with Trump. He's supposedly done with Trump. I think it's a bad idea, and I've said this time and again, for entertainers, designers, anybody who markets a product to everyone, right, to get into politics. I don't think it's a good look for Taylor Swift. I don't think it's a good look for Kanye. Now, I happen to, most of what Kanye said in the Oval Office, I agree with him. I think he's spot on, and he wasn't as crazy as he's being made out to be. I think that the reason that the media thinks Kanye is crazy is because he's a powerful, wealthy black man who's saying, look, what has the Democratic Party done for us? Now, with all this said, the person behind this, there is a movement, right? There's a movement afoot to encourage black Americans to leave the Democratic Party. And it's got a clever nickname. Have you heard this? Blexit. So it's like Brexit, but with an L, Blexit. So it's a black exit away from the Democratic Party, started by an activist named Candace Owens. And she's relevant to all of this because early on it was her ideas and speeches and tweets that Kanye referenced and said, I like what this gal is saying, and really blew her up and gave her more of a national spotlight. I think she also is one of the people that then arranged a connection with Trump. There's some history in there with that. But nonetheless, this Blexit thing right now is getting a lot of press because, of course, black unemployment right now, record lows. The economy has certainly prospered or helped prosper the black community. And this is one of the things that Trump promised back in 2016. He said, hey, take a chance. What do you have to lose? Everybody went crazy. How can you say that? Who do you think you are? But the truth is that the Democratic Party, kind of like the Republican Party with those of us who care about immigration, uses black voters every election cycle, says, come vote for us. Because those people are racist. They're terrible. They're racist. And then what do? Bait and switch and do nothing whatsoever for the black community. And here, in her own words, Candace Owens is in front of the White House. There's a big rally last Friday, Turning Point USA. A lot of people showed up. And this is her talking about her take on black American politics.
You know what we're really sick of? We're sick of fake news. We're sick of people saying that this president is racist, that this administration is racist. We're sick of the media using black people to get what they want, which is just power, okay? Black people do not have to be Democrat. Black lives have never, ever, ever mattered to the Democrat Party. Black votes always have. They create this narrative every 4 years that the Republicans are racist. They try to scare us. Are we such punks that we are so scared to try something different because every 4 years they knock for our votes and they say, vote for us because the other guy's racist?
This is why the Democrats love Don Lemon. Help spread this narrative. Republicans are racist. Trump is racist. White men are racist. White men are terrorists or more radicalized than ISIS. Blah, 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 blah. All this nonsense. The Democratic Party, meanwhile, has created the greatest welfare state in the history of our country. Ever, right? If you trace it back to FDR. And it's the welfare state that has literally destructed black communities. It's sick. And so Kanye wasn't that crazy, but he's right to get away from it because it doesn't help him sell shoes. It doesn't help him sell his music. He you want to be non-controversial if you're an actor, a performer, or anything like that. That's my honest take. And him... By the way, him adjusting this and moving away from it is an acknowledgement, too, that he's a strategic thinker. He's not as crazy as he's made out to be. All right. We will end with a thought about the midterms and a prognosis, if you will. Sam Rzhovsky, back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is a solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
All right, what is going to happen on Tuesday? Is it going to go as the polls predict, or will there be an upset? Let me tell you one thing first. And that is that I think that this is a win-win for Trump, regardless of the outcome. So if things go exactly as planned, I believe that Trump will have an easier time winning re-election in 2020, running against a Nancy Pelosi-led House of Representatives, running against an empowered, emboldened Maxine Waters, running against a foaming mad at the mouth, Adam Schiff. Like all these terrible Democrats that are suddenly going to get the spotlight on them, they're going to get all this power. They're going to be great foils. And it'll be a lot harder, by the way, if Congress goes to Trump Republicans, because then there's no excuse for failure. It's harder to run against your own party, right? Especially after you've vociferously campaigned for them. Okay. So there's more pressure on Trump if the Republicans win, in my opinion. Now, the other part of this now is, so what's actually going to happen? And I do believe, and I agree, for example, with Scott Adams, the Dilbert creator. He said this on Fox News a few days back. and it's all about turnout. Listen to what he says.
I think it might be the biggest, as you heard, the biggest turnout for a midterm by Republicans. Part of it is because Republicans have something to lose, and part of it is because it might be the most fun day they've experienced since 2016. You know, if you go to the dentist and you have 12 cavities, you don't want to go back so much the next time. And that's what the Democrats experienced the last election. And I think Republicans are sort of a high action to talk ratio, and they may be underrepresented in the polls, and maybe far more likely to turn out because it's going to be fun if they win.
That's it. The Democrats went to the polls in 2016 and got creamed. They all remember that they were crying and they were hysterical. And then Trump got, oh my gosh, it actually happened. Trump was sworn in as president in January. And they went, they were all despondent. And that despondence hasn't cleared up, has it, in 2 years? This is you would think the way it's being portrayed in the media is with that type of outcome, the Democrats are even more motivated to go out and vote. But where is that in blue states where it doesn't matter a hill of beans what they do? States that Trump lost anyway. So my prediction is that this is not going to be a runaway victory for the Democrats. I just don't see it. I think a lot of these polls are wrong. For example, the one race I'm watching closely, the one in Utah with my brother-in-law, who's a good guy, he's running against Mia Love. Now, the Democratic Party ain't talking about it because, well, he's a white guy. He's a white guy running against a black woman. Oh, but inconveniently, right? The black woman's the Republican, right? So it doesn't fit the Democratic Party narrative. So they're being very hush-hush about this race. There's one poll that is tilting the race to Ben's favor, and that's the 7-point poll. But one of the things about it is it's a robocall poll, and it's not very precise, and it tends to favor Democrats. And I don't know. I mean, it's – who knows? But I can imagine there are a number of voters in that district. And it's Utah 4th, but it doesn't matter. It's a district part of Salt Lake City, Salt Lake County. There's some overlap there. I could see a number of these voters thinking, yeah, Ben's a good candidate. And by the way, if Ben wins this, it's because he's a great candidate and he'd make a fine congressman. But if he loses this, he loses it because they don't want Nancy Pelosi. He loses this because people will say in their minds, look, I like Ben. But you know what? I mean, it's not exactly like the Republicans in Congress are lockstep with Trump, but I don't know if I want these radicals out there who are promising impeachment proceedings, who want to open the border, who want to take away, who want to restrict gun ownership. I don't know if I want all of that. And Trump has succeeded in nationalizing these issues, these races, these small local races, making them about national issues. And I think that it'll lead to an unexpected result. I expect the unexpected. I'll say that. So we'll see where we are at this time next week. I will do a small show on election night from my house, and we'll get it up, I believe, on Wednesday morning at the latest. Okay, so we'll have some actual hot takes from that evening. I have some interesting guests. Maybe I can get one or two of them on for you. So look for that midweek. We'll have an extra podcast. I'll promise you that. Sam Rzhovsky, have a great time. Get out there and vote. And vote red. See you next week. Keep on learning. Soldier!